Wednesday, October 15th, isn't it? Whoa, what an exciting game between the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox. But tonight, we bring you your letters. CTV takes the public pulse. And with me to do so is Mr. Smith, who's been to Washington and back. Matt Marti. I'm Stephen Durst. This is Mark Zapatowski and John, just John. We call him John the Just. To begin, I'm going to show you how this works. We're each going to take 2 minutes to read a letter from the editor that we either like or despise, or at least think is just interesting. Then we're going to open the phones and ask our callers to call in and read letters to editors that they think is significant. So I'll show you how this is done. Here's one from the Detroit Free Press from September 15th, exactly a month ago today, I believe. Oil is paid for. In response to letter of September 12th, oiler Bin Laden, yes, oil is a big issue. Not the only one as implied, but the letter writer must think the USA is just stealing the oil. In fact, we never take it. We pay for it. Just look at the wealth in the Middle East generated by the purchase of their quote-unquote oil. They should begin to use their wealth to help their own people rise out of poverty. Dick Gibson, Dearborn Heights. So there's some things there I agree with and disagree with. However, I must admit he's got a point when he says they should be using that money to help their people rise out of poverty. So I've used my 2 minutes. I'm going to turn it over to Matt Marti. You've got 2 minutes, sir.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Yes, here at the Society for Economic Equality, we tend to respect all opinions. We want to create a voice to get all opinions out there. I mean, free speech. So when you hear different letters tonight, you know, we're just trying to get them out there. So what I'm going to do is read a letter, what it's called is Stop Profiteering in Iraq.
Graphics,
please. Today I just read an article detailing more close links between the businessmen who have contracts to supply the military and to rebuild Iraq and the Bush administration. These include people such as Joe Alba, Mr. Bush's campaign manager in 2000, and the director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency until March, Edward Rogers Jr. and Lanny Griffith, lobbyists who were assistants to the first president, George Bush, and now have close ties to the White House. We were all already familiar with the lucrative contracts with Halliburton, Dick Cheney's old but still connected firm, allegations that big industries are writing the environmental rules for their own industries in complete disregard to the consumer's interests, and the tax cuts which are lopsidedly benefiting the most wealthy. I find it inexcusable, in italics, that our country is sinking into its largest deficit ever for an increasingly unjustified preemptive war led by people who are grossly benefiting themselves and their supporters. These same leaders are callously disregarding the taxpayers who increasingly need help with medical coverage. How long will we allow this to go on in the name of the United States of America? That's by Kathleen Miller, Grand Rapids, Wednesday, October 8th, Grand Rapids Press.
That's a very impassioned speech you gave there. Would you care to make a comment?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of it, but it is very impassioned, and it brings to the topic effective arguments and the parts of effective argument, which are credibility, topic, and emotions, right? Like credibility is the ethos, you know. Where's the evidence? Topic is the information, you know, of it. The emotions are the pathos. This one was pretty heavy on the pathos, for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely heavy on the emotion. We'll get more into
later.
I think it's Mark Zapatowski's turn. I'd like to say Mark Zapatowski is a founding member of CTV and our executive producer now for a good 7 years, I think. Anyway, Mark, go ahead. Your 2 minutes.
Well, this letter by Jim Lowell of Wyoming, Michigan, is full of pathos, and if I may say so, ironos as well.
I like that.
Real weapons in Washington. Real weapons are in Washington. I see another president is asking for another $600 million to look for those elusive, mythical weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The real weapons of mass destruction can be found right here in Washington, and they have a name: Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld.
Could you read that again, more like how Ken Burns would have read it in the Civil War thing? Like, just imagine these guys are all long dead.
Real weapons are in Washington. I see the president is asking for another $600 million to look for those elusive, mythical weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The real weapons of mass destruction can be found right here in Washington, and they have a name: Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld. Jim Lowell, Wyoming, Michigan.
It's hard to believe that a letter like that is coming out of Wyoming, Michigan. And I've been liking the letters I've been seeing to the editors lately. It seems like a lot of people who before had been willing to just go along are really beginning to worry about their country.
And
that can only
Press.
Be a good sign. The Grand Rapids Press.
Wow.
Mr.
Wow.
Smith, you've been to Washington and you've come back. So why don't you give us your best
All right.
letter?
Here's one. I wasn't going to read it because it's a little long, but I'm going to. It's from Yes. It's a Journal of Positive Futures, the fall 2003.
Look at the camera.
It depends on us.
Smile big, man.
I am a liberal, progressive, pro-justice, pro-peace, green Christian Democrat. I feel I am profoundly guilty because I bombed Iraq, killing thousands of innocent people. I also recently bankrupted California and allowed a corrupt multinational energy corporation to build millions from us and drive thousands out of work. I allowed a near-fascist junta, which betrays both our people and our troops, to steal the White House, and I supported a cowardly Congress and Senate in capitulating to the dissolution of our democracy. How did I do all this? I did not participate fully in my democracy. In the last 3 years, I only voted. I did not work at my precinct office. I did not write my editors or my state and federal representatives. I did not phone canvas. I did not go door to door. It is not too late. For every hour we spend on marching, we must spend 10 hours over the next 21 months engaging the electoral system. We must write our elected officials. We must organize, not for marches, but for votes. We must organize among the young, working poor, and people of color, three groups we traditionally leave to be seduced by the Republican Party. Bush was able to steal Florida by less than 600 votes. Think how few of us could have changed so much in the last 2 years. We must acknowledge the difference between the obnoxiously imperfect and irrevocably destructive among our candidates while we work to put someone actually good and true in office. If we don't, we are going to lose the option of putting anybody in office.
Well, that's a mouthful. So here we have a liberal, progressive Democrat being...
Very
driven by, being driven by guilt to write a letter to the editor telling other people what to do. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Well you know...
A lot of guilt in that one, at the beginning anyway.
I know,
But very impassioned.
When I first started to read it, I thought, oh, geez, listen to this. But as I read along, I realized that there's a lot to it.
There's an ethos to it,
yeah.
Too, because...
and a bit up on ironos.
And a bit of an ironos. I like that, ironos. But you used up your whole 2 minutes reading the letter, but we'll give you another 15 seconds to comment.
Ironos again.
No, it's ironos. If we don't do anything about it, we got no business to talk about it. And
okay.
And don't you feel guilty?
No.
All the time, I know you're guilty of everything. You bought a car now.
Yeah.
I don't know how you're going to live with yourself.
John. Give him 3 minutes too.
Sure. This letter needs a little introduction because it's in response to an article which was published on the World Socialist website, WSWS.org, published by, get this, the International Committee for the Fourth International.
Okay.
Those socialists have about the most ugly sense of poetry. But anyways, the article It was called Millions Still Without Power a Week After Hurricane Isabel. And I'll just read the first paragraph so you get a flavor of that. The devastation left behind by Hurricane Isabel, which struck the mid-Atlantic United States on September 18th and 19th, raises new questions about the decay of the U.S. infrastructure, particularly the electrical power system, whose critical weaknesses were already exposed in the blackout that hit eight states in the Northeast and Midwest a month ago. And then a few days later, they received this letter, which I liked. They don't give headlines to their letters. Hello, I live in Richmond, Virginia, in a neighborhood known as Oregon Hill. We are Dominion Power's closest neighbor. I can walk a few blocks and see Dominion Power's headquarters on the James River. We are a mostly working class neighborhood. As a neighborhood, we fought against Dominion Power when they decided to move in next to us. They put their headquarters on a floodplain and built offices that block our view of the river. Almost all the homes in Oregon Hill still have no power. I appreciate your article. I forwarded it to the neighborhood email list. We have previously discussed the possibility of getting together as a neighborhood and to try to figure out a way to set up independent renewable energy power in order to be independent from our rude neighbor. Signed, TB, 25th September 2003.
Whoa, from where, though?
He said Richmond, Virginia is where
he wrote from.
Richmond,
Virginia.
What I liked about that is that it's very personable without being overwrought in the ethos. And he also brings up another thing, which is an action, which wasn't mentioned before. He's suggesting, well, he's not suggesting what other people is doing. He's saying what he's doing.
Right. Mm.
And that's similar to Dennis's or Mr. Smith's letter. About the action of going out and vote, whereas this is even on a more direct scale dealing with electrical power. And
right.
I like that a lot. From a hurricane to Mark generating your own power, I thought was an interesting leap for anyone to make, to see the big picture of weather and climate and how that should reflect in their neighborhood association.
You have a duty.
Mm. Yeah,
to be involved.
A sense of duty, yeah.
Yeah. There's a time when you have to make that stand.
Yeah, hopefully it won't be too late. Once the power is out, how are you going to build your windmill? Okay, let's see. Next round, I'd like to put up the telephone number and let our callers get in. We're reading letters from the public polls. CTV takes the public polls, and there's our number, 459-4881. We're asking callers to read their favorite letter to the editor of late, make a few comments, and we'll take it from there. While we're waiting for your calls, 2 minutes each. Who wants to go first?
I will.
Zap.
This is Grand Rapids Press, and this is October 2nd. Just say no to $87 billion. This most recent request from President Bush for $87 billion to be spent reconstructing Iraq is at best absurd and more likely an outrage. Why hasn't he made sure that the grandiose proposals he has presented are funded? I would like to see some emphasis by this president to reconstruct our public schools, reconstruct our social programs, and reconstruct our intelligence community, the latter being at least as important, if not more so, than instilling a false sense of fear in Americans while insulating and assaulting any foreign nation we see fit. This president talks in terms of we and sacrifice, yet what has he sacrificed? He has sacrificed jobs for tax cuts. He has sacrificed health care for tax cuts. He has sacrificed education for tax cuts. And for what? So that no child is left behind? His blundering interpretation of economics has surely left many behind, except, of course, his wealthy benefactors. This administration has been dishonest, deceitful, and arrogant. It has alienated hard-won allies and propagated aggression towards us, with us. It's shoot-from-the-hip rhetoric Now this president wants us to make more sacrifices. It's time for this Congress to say no, simply no, no, we will not allow our national debt to spiral to $500 trillion. No, we will not let the deceitfulness of this administration destroy international relationships and jeopardize the safety of Americans abroad. No, we will not continue to put our brave military personnel in harm's way for the profit of corporations like Halliburton. It's time for the accountability and the sacrifice to be taken by President Bush. The answer must simply be no. This is Don Lee of Grand Rapids.
Don Lee Jr. of Grand Rapids. Now, that's the most impassioned and strongest letter we've had so far. And if Don Lee's listening tonight, I certainly hope he will call us and follow up on that. Whoa, that's powerful.
Very well put. Very well put.
Wow. Yeah, and to think it came out of Grand Rapids.
We give Don Lee Jr. a 5 stars on that one.
Good use of language.
This is what I believe is happening, though. We have people with good minds who before were not concerned enough to really get involved, and now you see their letters to the editor, and they're just beginning to think, what should I do? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so...
You can see these in the New York Times, too, although lately I noticed that The New York Times is completely obsessed with Arnold.
Arnold.
Too much on Arnold.
A lot of Arnold watching out there. Well,
time to pump up California.
Your 2 minutes are 5 seconds past, so let's go to
who? Here, I got a quick one here.
Dennis.
Okay, Dennis has a quick one.
Read Between the Lines is called, this is out of Guns and Ammo, October 2003. Says, I was greatly moved by the review of Death by Gun Control in the August issue. It should be required reading in all American schools. It really irks me when people refer to the government. The so-called government can be one person or a group of people with the same misguided ideology. We the people should take care of our own security / self-defense needs, as the Second Amendment plainly states. Roger Perkins, Oak Ridge, California.
Oak Ridge, California. Do you think he voted for Arnold? I think he did.
Yeah. See, that might be why we can't...
But that's a good point, though. I mean, it brings up the topic I kind of touched on earlier that, you know, this show isn't necessarily about the nature of the opinions. It's more about how they're put out. And, you know...
Well, this guy has an opinion.
Yeah,
I think we got a telephone.
He's probably representing a lot of people.
Yeah, and but he put it out well. He stated it plainly and to the point, you know.
Well, yeah.
And it's somewhat convincing, I mean. But still.
He talks about government
when he says
in a
the Second Amendment plainly states that we should be involved in our own self-defense, that, you know, I think he might be overstating.
No, well, yeah, a little bit. But.
Still. I think he's on target as far as taking responsibility for being your own government. I mean, that is the idea of democracy.
Exactly.
And it's... you know, it's tilted towards a certain stance that some people might call right wing, but it's the same idea of personal responsibility is also shared on the left wing. So it's really, it's only when it gets into the big media, it seems to me, that they become isolated. You know, the left and the right become entrenched after those ideas get put through the blanderizer.
Have you noticed, though, a lot of your extreme rights, extreme lefts, a lot of the same ideas about the too much government control and all this stuff, they seem to have that always seems to overlap right there.
It's because you have anarchists who don't want government, and they're considered far left, and then you have those libertarians who are considered far right, and they don't want any government either, but they don't want any government so that can take over, and then, you know.
Even more than libertarians, I mean, extreme right-wing folks, too, you know, like way right.
Yeah. Libertarians are anarchists who have a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, left, I mean, yeah.
Okay, we've got a telephone call.
Yeah,
I want to remind you not to talk at the same time.
Okay,
everyone's got to talk one at a time. L.A. Dave is on the phone. He's got 2 minutes.
Yeah. I was reading this article from the August 13th New York Times.
We only want letters, but go ahead, whatever.
Are we talking letters now?
Go ahead.
Do the article, dude.
Well, it turns out that there was an article on why we are tuning out the TV news.
Speak up. I can't understand you. What?
Why we're tuning out TV news.
Okay.
Why are we tuning out TV news?
We watched the fireworks over Iraq while we ate dinner. The war was
He's reading it.
I can't hear him. Oh, can you really speak up? A little.
We watched the fireworks over Iraq while we ate dinner. The war was reported in such a way that it appeared no Iraqis, soldiers or civilians, ever died. We heard about Saudi involvement in the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and then it just went away as if it never happened. No investigating, no follow-up. Bias in news broadcasting today is frightening. No one expects to hear the whole story, and we obviously never do. How dare the news media or our government decide what Americans can stand to watch or what they are entitled to know? Try telling the truth. I promise we'll watch and listen. I was wondering if you guys could address a little bit about the media coverage these days and what you think we might be able to do to...
Yeah, I have something to say right away about that, and that is I'm still waiting myself very impatiently to see this final score on the Iraq War. I mean, we haven't, I mean, obviously there is no final score, but at least, you know, when halftime was over and the country was occupied by the United States and Britain, we still didn't have numbers on how many Iraqis got killed. And I know just that one day when they took a little pleasure excursion into the middle of Iraq and left, they left behind about 1,600 dead Iraqi soldiers, but it was like it was no big deal. And there's never been an accounting of that. I think it's because you're talking about crushing third world nations, you know, by the most advanced military in the world with lots of firepower, and you're looking at hundreds of thousands of people who get killed in those situations, even though maybe only a hundred or a couple hundred Americans get killed. So it's pretty grotesque. That's why you're not hearing about it.
Wow, so people ate dinner while they were watching bombing going on, the fireworks over Baghdad.
The shock and awe.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, back in Vietnam, you wouldn't have the stomach to watch to eat dinner while watching, you know.
Well, that's because the media was more honest then. Now the media is a fully owned subsidiary of NBC, nuclear, biological, and chemical.
It's way more grotesque.
Okay, we're all talking.
Well, thanks a lot, L.A. Dave. I'm the moderator, and I get to decide who gets to talk when, and I've been giving you guys 2 minute chunks.
I've got something.
We have anyone else on the phone? Yeah, I would say it's just John's 2 minutes, so could we all just shut up for 2 minutes?
Well, this one comes from, based off the caller talking about the Times. That's what he was reading out of, right, the New York Times, didn't he say? This is a letter, again, to the World Socialist website, talking about an article called Friedman of the Times Declares War on France. Dear editor, can someone please explain how in the world Mr. Friedman has achieved 3 Pulitzer Prizes? I have a lot of newfound respect for Bill Vann's concise and accurate beatings of Mr. Friedman's, quote, lies. In my mind, Mr. Friedman's real failure as a journalist is not only based on clear evidence that the apparent sole purpose of his columns is to push his own narrow-minded, pro-conservative, anti-Muslim agenda, but also expose his extremely weak and continual attempts to rationalize the Bush administration's actions waging the war in Iraq as being beneficial to Americans, which it is not. Without UN approval, the war in Iraq was a failure from the start, and blaming France is merely Friedman's immature way of expressing his innermost childish frustrations at the current situation. Grow up, Mr. Friedman. Not only does Mr. Friedman come across in his column as a muddled thinker, but his writings are clearly demonstrative of his undeserving self-importance as well. Signed, E.H.W.
I largely agree with what the writer says about Thomas Friedman, but in his defense, in the past couple weeks, Friedman is beginning to ring alarm bells about the possibility that we might have made a big mistake.
Well, has he admitted that he made a big mistake?
No. He'll never do that.
Well,
I think it is your turn.
Well, if it's even from a conservative standpoint, Iraq could be considered a big mistake because the army is stuck in Iraq, and the army is small now. And
essentially, that's the army that the U.S. has available, and it's all in Iraq. And if something else were to happen, the U.S. would be very hard pressed to put together another army to do anything. And that's not a position that the Hawks like to be in. That's all I'd have to say about that, really.
For certain, they plan to be able to fight two major wars at the same time. That was the plan.
They have a small army in Korea. Right. If Korea were to blow up, they'd have to throw an army there. Then, I mean, it's just kind of
the U.S. has 50,000 troops in Korea, but North Korea has a million men under arms. Of course, they're ill-fed and ill-equipped, and we've got the firepower to take out 50-1 easily. But now that they have nuclear weapons,
our own troops are kind of overextended too. There's a shortage of food and water over in Iraq. A lot of suicides going on from the pressure of the extended stays they've been forced to, or tours of duty.
Like all the Dear John letters they get.
I would say that Bush. I mean, if people really think that the situation is bad right now, if Bush ends up being elected to another term, I think that he'll look at it as a vindication of his military policies for the first strikes, you know, the preemptive wars. In order to continue that, or even to do Iraq long term as people leave the military because their enlistments are up, he's going to have a draft in order to get together more armies to do this.
What do you think, callers? This is a live phone-in show, October 15th. This is live, 459-4881. I know everyone's watching the baseball game, and what a great game it is, but there's another great game afoot, and it's called...
geopolitics.
War. Yeah. War. War and opinions on war.
Bismarck called it real politic, you know. The
geopolitics.
Okay.
Game
now
for the world.
Talk one at a time. I'm going to give Mr. Smith 2 minutes now. The phones are open. Okay, let's go.
Death and injury in Iraq. I wasn't going to read this, but we were just talking about it. The British newspaper, The Guardian, reported on August 4th that at least 827 Americans have been wounded in Iraq, about half of them after Bush's triumphant appearance on the carrier. Many of the injuries include lost limbs. Shocking. But the unofficial count is much higher. Lieutenant Colonel Delane, in charge of airlifts of wounded from Iraq at Andrews Air Force Base, says he has counted 4,000 wounded, and numbers increase daily. The Naval Medical Center at Bethesda, MD, receives almost daily deliveries of injured Marines. And CBS reports that Walter Reed Army Hospital is working around the clock, taking over beds from cancer patients. The total death toll at this time, including suicides, is 248. Why are troops still being shot? Why are Bush and Rumsfeld hiding the true numbers of wounded and killed from us? Angela Bradshaw, Los Angeles, California.
Angela who?
Bradshaw.
Angela Bradshaw, Los Angeles, California. Why are Bush and Cheney hiding the true death count? Well, that's what Mark was asking, so let's let him comment first.
Well, they're including the true death counts according to the way they're counting at combat deaths, and they try and minimize accidents and all that, but by keeping the very large number of wounded people, many of them severely, out of the press at all,
public eye,
it makes it seem that, well, there's just a handful
just
of Americans that are being hurt.
it's
for the same reason that we don't see the actual faces.
Which
of,
makes it colder than anything.
Americans or even Iraqis who were killed, you know, people going, you know, like we saw in Vietnam, like,
can we get a shot of this? Do that.
Okay, in Vietnam, you know, people would be eating their cornflakes in the morning. They'd see the morning news, and there would be some American.
I'm dying.
I'm dying. Right. There's my stomach, and then there'd be the close-up of the stomach wound. And
they don't show that.
They don't show that.
Yeah,
anymore.
They learned. It didn't work.
And that's because war is real, and that was too real to maintain a war for 10 years. And so that's why they're not repeating the same mistake and showing you the real faces of, war, real death.
So is this government censorship, or is this just the media going along?
They say that it's the kinder, gentler face of the media, that we have so much respect for people who are dying and getting killed and blown apart that we won't show their faces anymore.
Right, the privacy of
the war. But that's not what it's about. It's about the politics of making the war seem a lot cleaner than it really is. If you don't see the death, if you don't see the real human face on that number, then it's not real.
Thank you, Mark. You read the letter. You make your comment.
Oh, I was making comments the whole time. Did you hear me?
Yeah,
I was talking over it.
Please, one at a time.
It's just, that's what it is. It's PR. It's good PR. They don't want to talk about it. If it wasn't popular, wouldn't happen in Vietnam. We lost that popular thing there. It's which makes it more cold and calculating than anything. Makes it even scarier just to think that it's nice marketing to keep the war popular.
And the president
causes
all I
have to say about
the
that.
War popular. Okay, Can Matt,
I make,
it's you.
One comment?
Yes,
on
please.
Something Mark said, he asked the question, is it the media getting soft or is it government propaganda? And I think those two things are now one and the same with GE owning NBC and CNBC and MSNBC. General Electric is one of the giant military contractors. And the whole advertising structure, the capitalist structure, it really doesn't get you very far to break the two apart any longer. Mm-hmm. You know?
GE definitely produces many weapons of mass destruction. And they own NBC, which makes me think that NBC should stand for Nuclear Biological Chemical. But it's Matt's 2 minutes.
Well, yeah, I agree with that, too. Lockheed Martin, this huge weapons manufacturer. I mean, war is profitable, right? That's the bottom line.
What about the Carlyle Group, to which both the Bin Laden family and the Bush families are heavily invested?
Yeah, it's and so they're going to protect their profits, you know, they're going to protect their investments.
And if people get hurt on the way, that's just collateral damage.
Yeah. Well, I'll read an article, because when we were, you know, talking about the show and picking out articles, we wanted to bring some that were kind of poorly written, too. I don't know, I thought this one was pretty poorly written. It says, President Helping to Eradicate Terror. I read the letter titled Oust Bush for Economy, Pulse, September 23rd, in my 10th grade literature class, and would like to respond to writer Bob Byrd's underground accusations against President Bush. Now, this is 10th grade, so that is a good point, that coming from a 10th grader, possibly, that's the wrong graphic to put up on this one.
That's definitely not a 10th grader.
No, that's the wrong graphic. You can put up a different graphic. And in fact, I kind of missed that when I... But still,
minute and
first,
a half.
It's not just the rich or millionaires who have benefited from Bush's tax cuts. My own middle-class family has received extra money as a result of a child's tax credit. We are not by any means millionaires. Good point. And yes, President Bush has requested a large sum of money for the war in Iraq. However, I would much rather see our money going to Iraq now than to have to pay the price of numerous human lives in the future. Now that Saddam is gone, and we have a much, much, in italics, lower risk of terrorist attacks such as 9/11, an attack that resulted in the whole nation experiencing deep loss. Our money has helped eradicate the Iraqi terrorist regime. I, along with many Iraqis, feel much safer knowing that Saddam is no longer in power, is not a current threat to the world. Also, about Mr. Byrd's claim that this is an oil war, it has been clearly stated that this is not a war for oil. I have heard this only from liberals and Democrats. The very name of the war, Operation Iraqi Freedom, strongly demonstrates that this is a war to liberate the country of Iraq and help them build a new government so that they might enjoy the same freedoms that we take for granted each and every day. So yes, America, wake up and think about the decision that this administration is making to, quote,
provide for the common defense, quote, unquote, quote, ensure domestic tranquility, unquote, and, quote, secure blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Alyssa M. Hart, Byron Center.
Alyssa M. Hart, Byron Center. Yep.
10th grade. And I have to admit, when I first, I skipped over that. I didn't see that it was a 10th grader that wrote this. So.
Well, comment.
Well, I'd say it's great for any 10th grader to write a letter to the editor, for one thing.
All right, then. You know, any other comments
but
on that?
I would say, just one more quick comment, that it is kind of an example of, you know, some, maybe brainwashing is a hard term, but at younger and younger ages to believe in just mere names. Just the mere name of the military operation brings so much meaning, like Operation Iraqi Freedom. Like, that's supposed to mean.
She says, just the name of the war shows you what the war is.
Yeah.
And she said, we read this letter in class, and I felt compelled to write this letter. And it does sound like it was written by an intelligent 10th grader.
Sure.
But it reminds me of the letters that have been showing up in the press under the with the names of soldiers in Iraq that are form letters being put out by the Pentagon without their permission. Have you heard about this story?
I haven't.
It's similar to the story about how they're hiding the critically wounded and trying to keep that out of the press.
They're pumping out form letters?
They're pumping out a form letter.
Sign them?
They just put their names on them without even asking them.
Or are they citizens, just citizens?
No, they're soldiers. Soldiers in Iraq's letters have been appearing in U.S. newspapers, but they didn't write them and they didn't sign them, and the Pentagon just sent them to the public pulses. I'm not sure I have found any myself, but I've read about this story in the Current Nation. It was quite interesting. I hadn't seen it anywhere else.
People who have the opinions that 10th grader has have a lot of, either they're dishonest or they have a lot of naivete. I think she has a lot of naivete. I think almost everyone who is supporting the administration has, you know, either some kind of interest in the oil,
bad faith,
or they have a lot of naivete. People just don't pay attention to our own history or to the nature of human beings and politics, and see that there's a lot of dishonesty involved. I mean, you don't have to scratch anything very far before you find a lot of dishonesty, but a lot of politics is based on dishonest people manipulating the naive who never pay attention to history or develop a realistic sense of politics.
Wow, that's straight out of Plato and Machiavelli. Very good, Mark. John, give us some comments while we get this phone call queued up.
Great. More phone calls, please. I like the idea of kids getting involved and thinking of politics. The one thing I guess I would comment on, there are a lot of factual errors in the letter, but one thing in particular that she said was that the only people saying a certain thing are the Democrats and liberals,
right,
which is a circular argument, because the thing that you determine whether someone is liberal or Democrat or whatever is if they have those certain positions. So that's not even really making an argument, it's stating an obvious fact. A definitional thing.
Yeah, it's a tautology.
Yeah, there you
by
go.
By definition.
Tautology.
I'd like to call it tautology.
A circular argument. Very popular with the right wing these days.
As is ad hominem attack.
They like to say ipso facto, abracadabra, cakewalk in Iraq. Well, we're here to ask you what you think, because this is a live call-in show. October 15th. L.A. Dave is on the phone again. Okay, Dave, you got 2 minutes. What's the score on the game, Dave? You watching the game?
If you guys could just moderate a little bit here. I'm hearing a lot of voices at the same time.
Sorry, Dave.
Funny guy.
I think that we've got to address the fact that this is really a psychological war that we've got going on. The war between the government and their targets, as well as it's a psychological game.
A psychological war, a psychological game. Can you speak up a little bit? I'm having trouble.
Yeah,
hearing.
I mean, this is basically it's such a hot topic is because there's so much psychological warfare going on. I just wanted you guys to address that topic a little bit.
Could you call us back with the score?
The score of the game? The Cubs are winning 14-3.
Oh, wow.
It's the first half of the first inning.
He might not be. Anyway, we could be missing the greatest game of all time, but I want John to address the issue of how psychological this war could be.
Well, I totally agree with L.A. Dave on that.
Thank you, guys.
And Noam Chomsky called it, or he didn't coin it, but he called his book Manufacturing Consent, which is what democracy has devolved into. It's no longer an expression of the people. It is a way of managing the perceptions of people, which is the same as brainwashing. Is to if you manage someone's perceptions of what things are, you control how they can think about those things, and then their responses are that much more predictable.
Yeah, it's like editing their thoughts or censoring bits and pieces.
I have something on the psychological nature of the war, and that is, did you notice from the very beginning of the 9/11 thing and all the way through the Iraq thing, we've just redredged up World War II and the image of World War II in a very big way. And, first it was like all this talk about Pearl Harbor, and then pretty soon we were into why it was that the Iraqis were like the Japanese or the Germans, and they would need to be occupied for 10 years or more. Now, the thing that gets me about it is just by saying that it was a new Pearl Harbor at the very beginning and comparing the occupation of Japan and Germany to the occupation of Iraq, it was like saying that Iraq was like Germany and Japan in terms of its threat to the United States. Nothing could be further from the truth. Japan and Germany were, first echelon superpowers of their time when they were fighting the United States in World War II. Iraq was not a threat to the United States, didn't have weapons of mass destruction, and wasn't about to invade anybody because it was constantly being bombed from the air, and there were sanctions. It was cut off from the world. Now, so what made it so Japan-like and so German-like, and why was nothing? It was just by saying that it's like World War II, people accepted that it needed to be treated in the same way that two countries that were tremendous threats to the United States during World War II were treated. I just don't think it's logical.
Well, there was a great disconnect in the rhetoric of the administration. For one, they were saying, Iraq is a huge threat and we've got to deal with them now before they get out of hand. And then they were saying the war is going to be a cakewalk. Yeah. And anyone with a 10th grade education and logic should have been able to see where that crap was.
They were saying that the war was going to pay for itself because the Iraqis had all this oil.
Well, now they're saying, we can't make the Iraqis pay for it because it really belongs to Halliburton.
Well, they're doing it.
Look, we'll let you make that point in a minute, but first we got to give Rick on the phone 2 minutes. Hey, Rick, you got 2 minutes. Cubs you got a letter, or you just want to blather away or something?
Cubs are trailing 3-0.
Come on, I'll bring it
up.
I can't hear you.
He said Cubs are trailing 3-0
in the first inning.
First inning.
Oh, well, that's not good.
Oh, that's fine.
Thanks, Rick. Anything else?
Well, you got to remember when you talk about Noam Chomsky and manufacturing consent and all the Pentagon propaganda, you got to remember one thing, and this is key. The masses are asses. It never takes too much to really deceive them because most people just really aren't too bright.
Well, it takes one to know one. I'm one of the masses, and I know I'm an ass, too.
Unfortunately.
You got a minute and 45 seconds. Anything else to say?
That sums it up. I can't say anything more profound.
Give him enough rope. He's already hung himself. Okay. I got a letter to read from the Detroit Free Press, and I get 2 letters. I've read one. Okay. Detroit Free Press. This is, again, September 15th, 1 month ago today. It's called A Vote for Bush. Said, here is one longtime Democrat who will honor the dead of 9/11 by voting for George Bush in 2004. I don't like the tenor of the Democratic candidates. all of them. They seem more interested in the rights of the Al-Qaeda terrorists than the pursuit of those who murdered almost 3,000 Americans. Richard Jackson, Shelby Township.
You know,
my feeling when I read this was that it was a total sham.
Yeah,
and here
yeah.
was a guy who was already right-wing, claiming to be a Democrat, just to try to bolster his, the what would you say, the topical effect of his rhetoric. I did not believe it for a minute. But if Richard Jackson of Shelby Township is out there, give us a call and convince us. Oh, we've got another phone call. Linda.
Yes, can you hear me?
Could you speak up just a little bit?
Okay, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yes. What I find to be strange is at first that they were saying when they first went to war, we're going to do it alone. If we have to go it alone, we're going to go over there and take out Saddam. If the UN is going to be with us, great. But if they're not, we're still going to do this. And now, after this atrocity was happening over there with these young American soldiers dying every day, three at a time sometimes, and now they're saying we want France, Germany, we want the rest of the people to come in and help us to pay for this, and now we want your help. But at first they should have stopped this. They should have not rushed into this like this. It's just every day that I hear another American soldier has been killed, it just, oh, you just don't know how it breaks my heart.
Linda, do you have relatives over there?
Yes, I do. I have a nephew that's in the Navy. He was in, when they first started the war, he was on the USS Abraham Lincoln. And it is just, every time I hear it, it just, my heart just breaks when I hear about our soldiers, men and women over there dying. For what? Freedom for what? Freedom for Howard Stern to get on TV with this pornography. Freedom for these movie stars to parade up and down the red carpet and flaunt their money and their, you know what I'm saying? Freedom
right.
for these wicked corporate raiders to come in here and cheat American people. You know, I'm saying, what about the freedoms? They're nothing in America anymore. You see what I'm saying? Because it's so much evil. The freedom for the pedophile priest to keep on raping young children. It just hurts me to see this. And these people over here in the Middle East over here, these people, I don't know what they've been on. It's certainly not peace. That goes for the Palestinians as well as Israel. Thank you.
Wow, Linda, you know, there's the outrage. When Bob Dole asks where's the outrage, well, I think we just heard it. Thank you, Linda. I'm going to wrap up the show 10 minutes early tonight because I think that just said it. Can you just keep repeating that phone call?
Yeah, definitely well put. And I think Linda is a potential writer. I don't know if she writes letters, but she would definitely get
letters to the editor, man. Yeah.
I think that Linda was putting her finger on a lot of how it is that the United States can have a war that doesn't make all that much sense actually take place, like Iraq. And that's because since World War II, when maybe the U.S. had more sense about these sorts of things, we've developed this fantastic military infotainment industrial complex. And because you're so infotained all the time, you don't pay much attention to the industrial part leaking away to the rest of the world. You know, you just don't pay attention to many things that you know, a normal person without the infotainment complex would notice, like that all the jobs, essentially all the good jobs, are continually leaking out even faster during war to third world parts of the world. You know, like all those people that when you you call an 800 number and you're, you know, ordering something over the phone or trying to get your computer fixed, you may have trouble understanding them because they tend to be from India and in India at the time that you're talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just becoming normal. So, you know, that's something that the evil of the world, the war serves as a distraction. The war is not just the war against the Iraqis who want us out of there and are getting angrier all the time. The war is also a tremendous distraction against all sorts of evil that's perpetrated against our own people by our own government mm-hmm. and the corporations who are essentially farming out this incredibly wealthy country and selling off its pieces because it's profitable right now. And this war helps that profitability by being a distraction in itself, even though it's an awful thing in itself.
John would like to make a comment, but I would also like to second what you said. Obviously, the war in Iraq is more than just the war in Iraq. It is also a war here at home, and it's a war against the poor. It's a class war.
Anybody
who looks at it for a minute will honestly have to see that. With the tax cuts as we have them, I mean,
it's not just the middle class.
It's not just the $87 billion they want for this. It's the $600 billion they're giving to the top 1% of the population, while they take everything else away from everyone else. So it's John the Just's turn. Just John.
On the two-minute timer. A local example of the annexation that is going on in Iraq. I just read on Above the Fold. Front page, Grand Rapids Press, about Walmart wanting to put in one of its mega stores very close to a Meijer's store in Kentwood or something. I might get the wrong town wrong. Now, Meijer isn't the epitome of a great local supermarket, but at least it is a homegrown business. It's fairly local. It's only in a few states around here. So money that goes to Meijer's at least stays in the community. Walmart is asking for a special variance for the zoning laws. That is, they're taking over government functions, basically, for their own benefit so that they can bring in a store which will undersell Meijer's, put people out of work, and end up sending our money elsewhere, which is the same thing, or not the same, but a parallel to what happened in Iraq. And I think that's something that I'd love to see a lot of letters and action to stop that Walmart from happening.
I hate Walmart.
If we get anything out of the show, I hope it's the idea that the war on Iraq is not just a war on Iraq, it's also a war on 90% of the American people.
Yeah,
it's an economic thing. Can I make a comment? I want to read
1 minute for you
this.
And 1 minute for everyone else, okay. And then we're out of here.
Okay. I want to say that I agree with that it is an economic thing, that it is a war on poor people in America. And I'm just going to read the last half of this letter. Is a lie or monumental intelligence failure justification for getting Congress to authorize a war? The American people were lied into the Spanish-American War, lied into World War I, and lied into Vietnam. Will we be lied into other wars to promote the agenda of neoconservatives, neoliberalism? Okay, this is the part that gets into economics. Bush is pursuing what is perhaps the greatest anti-labor agenda since Grover Cleveland. Now it includes trying to severely limit overtime pay. George Orwell said a war can be used as an excuse for telling workers that they cannot have a raise. Bush was using what Iraq was supposed to have as an excuse for busting the West Coast Longshoremen's Union. After all, how can they strike? And he means it sarcastically. After all, how can they strike when our soldiers are risking their lives to stop Iraq from making atom bombs, which will go into the hands of terrorists and kill millions of Americans? That's Richard Solomon, New York City, in September 2003 of The Industrial Worker.
Excellent. One minute for Mr. Smith.
All right. This one's, I don't know what this is out of, actually. It's called Things Go Better with Coke. An ironic twist of Coca-Cola, the world's largest soft drink producer, is quickly becoming associated with the thirst throughout India. CorpWatch is currently highlighting four Indian communities where Coke is met with popular resistance because its bottling plants overuse and pollute local water resources, making drinking water scarce for residents. And in August, an Indian environmental group released tests showing that both Coke and Pepsi bottled in India contain high levels of toxic pesticide residues. The two corporate rivals actually held a joint press conference to deny the charges. Meanwhile, Coke has marginalized Indian investors who own 49% of the company's Indian holdings by circumventing the Indian law and denying them voting rights in the company. Coca-Cola, for its part, feels it has been welcomed as a good corporate neighbor.
Who wrote that?
TT.
TT from where?
Nothing.
10 seconds to comment.
Wait, I just want to I just want to, because Coke is, you know, they're one of the enemies. Those are the guys, big corporations.
Yeah, they're almost like Ford, DuPont.
Coke, CIA.
They murder labor activists in Colombia.
Well, they own 2/3 of Belize.
What a special flavor.
Yeah, they do.
Toxic Coke of Hindustan.
No, and there's no water. They're polluting the water they have and using up all the other water to make Coke. No water for you. Coke.
Okay, Just John. John the Just, you got a minute.
This is a letter from the New Unionist, newunionparty.org, published by the New Union Party for the Next American Revolution, October 20, 2003. This is a challenging letter called Flag Nay. Dave Zink is getting caught up in emotionalism and semantics in his letter in the September issue about washing the flag. Karl Marx once said that, quote, "The existence of the state is inseparable from the existence of slavery," unquote. State and national flags represent class-divided society and therefore forms of slavery. In the U.S. and other advanced nations, this means wage slavery, the robbery of the workers of most of the value they create in the form of goods and services. The stars of the U.S. flag represent states which today are organs of economic despotism. Patriotism is nationalism. Nationalism is the scourge of the industrial world. I would never burn the American flag because I respect veterans too much. They've put their lives on the line for capital. But washing the flag is like washing a corpse. It doesn't belong in our movement. John S. Gale, Phoenix.
Thank you, John. Mike, we got 1 minute from Zapatowski.
Well, I'd just like to say that there's been a change in American society, and you guys are saying war against the poor. I think it's much more than that, because it's gone far beyond the poor, and will in the future. People will find that it's war against the middle class. It's war against the upper middle class. It's like this this Highlander battle where there can only be one, and that's the logic of everything that's been going on in American politics for 30 years now. And even people who are in the 89th percentile are going to find that suddenly they're expendable in this rush to translate our economy into other third world economies, so that the few people that we have that are very wealthy will become absolutely extremely wealthy. And that's not benefiting the country, because the country is no part of this idea in reality. And if you're watching Bush too much and thinking, oh, our glorious president, oh, our glorious boys in Iraq, you're kind of missing an important part of the point, how this can be a smokescreen, and how maybe the most powerful forces in this entire game aren't really concerned about whether our boys in Iraq win or lose or die or whatever. It's about.
Thank you, Mark.
More than
powerful,
that.
Powerful. I want to thank our callers, L.A. Dave, especially Linda. Keep up the righteous outrage. You go, girl. And I want to thank the people who wrote letters to the editors that stimulated us to produce this program.
Don Lee Jr., great letter.
Don Lee Jr., yes, that was the letter of the week. Don Lee Jr. of Grand Rapids. Well, let's just read a little bit of that.
And high school kids, keep writing letters.
Yeah.
Yep.
Stop Walmart.